Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's January 8th, 2013. It's our first show of the year. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. I have an all-star cast with me tonight. I got the Good Beer Seal guys. I got Ben Granger from Beercraft, Ryan Barker from Adobe Blues, Josh Bernstein, a Brood Awakenings author, and he's here with a new app he's going to talk about, and a special guest, Yeppe from Evil Twin. We've been dying to meet him. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. So many of the beers that we like, you distribute in the whole country, and it's a great site to learn about everything from Beer Cloud and where to buy beers and beer education, everything. So here on the Heritage Radio Network, it's 2013. 2012 ended with a bang. We had Hurricane Sandy, and it really affected New York. Ryan at Adobe Blues is in Staten Island. He experienced that, and we're back. We made it through the new year, and I can't believe that it's a new year. But hey, everybody, let's raise our toast. We've got some of the Evil Twin beers tonight with Yeppe. Yeppe, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
So you're one of the cult brewers that we all love and aspire to meet. And I can't believe I'm touching him.
We're all touching him.
We're touching Yeppe.
Don't touch me too much.
So we're not going to ask about your twin brother, McKellar.
Who's that?
Because now you're more famous than him. But let's just talk about the basis. What beer are we drinking right now?
The beer we drink right now is called Hipster Ale. It's pretty simple pale ale that I did, hence the name Hipster Ale. And it's actually the first and only beer I've made in cans. I thought it was obvious to put that in cans as the first one, so that's the one we're drinking now. It's made to be easy drinkable, still flavorful, and to maybe, you know, get some of the non-craft beer drinkers to taste something new.
And Ben, do you carry a lot of Evil Twin at Beercraft?
Oh, yeah, we got tons of the stuff. Tons of the stuff, for sure.
What are some of the favorites that you've had?
We were just talking about it, but I drank the Ashtray Heart the other night. We've had the Cowboy. We've had Hipster Ale, the Yin, the Yang, the Yin and the Yang in the same bottle. We've had Old Yin? Yeah, Old Yin.
Whiskey casks.
Yeah, that stuff is so delicious. Thank you. Obviously, we've had the Hipster Ale.
Disco is another great one, too. Yeah, that's the Chardonnay double IPA blend.
That was delicious. All fantastic.
Thanks
all
a lot.
Fantastic.
And Ryan, at Adobe Blues, I know in Staten Island, you probably have the best selection of beer. Which of his beers have you had?
Probably. Yeah. We had Nurse Pepper on last year, which was phenomenal. That was awesome. Right now we have En Masa Jesus in bottles. It's sort of like a winter seasonal. I think there's only one left, so hopefully I get to have that tonight.
There's a coffee version coming out soon.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Awesome.
En Masse Café Jesus.
Yes, I'm in.
That's the name of it.
All right. So you're like the new breed of brewer. I know in Josh's book, Brood Awakening, he talked about collaborations. You're the new breed of brewer. Tell us what you do. You know, it seems that, you know, Brian Strumke is doing it with Stillwater and you.
They call us gypsy brewers. We didn't come up with the term, but someone did, and that's kind of what they call us. The big difference between us and normal brewers are that we don't have our own facility. We go in and rent other people's facilities because, you know, if they have extra capacity, we might as well use it. And it gives us a freedom to do stuff. We can do one-off batches, and if it doesn't come out good or if it doesn't sell good or whatever, we don't have to do it again. We don't have a big investment we have to pay back. That gives us a big freedom. It also, you know, we like to travel, and it's fun to be able to go to, you know, I go to Spain and brew a beer, I go to Norway and brew a beer, I go to Scotland and brew a beer. It's fun to, you know, to go to different places and see friends and brew some beers and drink even more beers and... Yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
So now, you've jumped onto the other side of the Linux. Now you've kind of made a home in Brooklyn, and so are we going to see a lot more beers being brewed in the U.S.?
Definitely. I mean, the reason for me to move to the U.S. with my family was primarily because Evil Twin was growing a lot, and I pretty much sold everything I made in the U.S. I chose to do that because, you know, it's a good market to get into. It's a fun place to, you know, to work and to, yeah, I mean, it's a good market. And I also had this envision that, you know, there was a new brewery opening up in Connecticut that I knew that I was going to brew at, and that had something to do with our move also, because I mean my problem right now is I don't have enough capacity. I could brew more and I could sell more, but it's been very limited. And I saw this place in Connecticut opening up, and you know, we have been involved since the very beginning, and they had capacity, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, but tell us about the place in Connecticut.
I mean, the Connecticut place is called Two Roads. It's a new kind of a production brewery where they build it, you know, for themselves to make their own line of beers, but also to bring in guys like us who needs the capacity. So it's kind of, you know, a home for gypsy brewers to brew more beers. My plan at Two Roads is to make a bigger scale of some of my most popular beers and have them out in bigger scale and at way better prices also, which is going to help a lot. So I have planned 8 years for this, for 2013, oh, 8 beers for 2013 that are all going to come out in 4-packs and kegs.
So how much does shipping costs impact your beer? And how much more affordable can they be made by making in the U.S.?
I mean, it's not just the shipping. The shipping impacts something, of course. But the breweries, first of all, Europe is way more expensive in, you know, labor and ingredients than it is over here. So that counts also. Plus, the breweries I'm using in Europe, most of them are pretty small and, you know, doing 10 hectoliters compared to now that I'm doing like 120 hectoliters at the time. It's a big difference. And one of the breweries I'm brewing at in Denmark, which is the brewery I've done most beers at so far, is, you know, located in a small island, and they have to sail the malt to the island, brew the beer, and sail it back. That's actually how it is, and that's, you know, it all adds up and puts.
Wait, where's that island brewing? What's that?
It's Fanø. I've done a lot of experimental beers, and you know, all my, you know, even more Jesus and Nurse Pepper that you mentioned, all those are all done in Fanø. It's a good brewery because it's small, so you can do experimental batches. And they had a really good brewer. He unfortunately moved on and moved to England now.
But where is it? What country?
In Denmark.
In Denmark.
Yeah, Fanø is a small island on the west coast of Denmark. So it's like, I think it's the most western part of, or most west part of Denmark you can go to. So it's out there. It gets cold in the winter.
One question I've always had is, how difficult is it to find space at a brewery to brew these? Like, I think about that with you, certainly with Pretty Things, with Stillwater. You know, at least it seems to me that if I had a brewery, I would want to be pumping out as much beer as I could.
Exactly. And it is difficult. I mean, I have a lot of guys, especially contacting me and asking, how do I become a gypsy brewer and what does it take? And I really, I've been homebrewing for many years. I would like to try the same and blah, blah, blah. And I always like to say, you know, there's two things you need to figure out first. First of all, you need to find someone to sell your beers, because that is actually probably the most difficult part. Second of all, you have to find a place to brew them, because, you know, as you say, a lot of these breweries, even the ones I use, they don't have any extra capacity. So it comes down to, you know, a long-time relationship, and we've been friends, and, you know, I have a distribution company in Denmark also that I distribute all over Europe, so I actually distribute a lot of those breweries already, so they kind of feel they owe me something. like a brewery, I brew at a brewery in Holland called De Molen, which is one of the best breweries in the world, yeah. And, you know, for me to get into De Molen pretty much came down to me being good friends with them and, you know, distributing their beers in Denmark. Otherwise, they would have been like, you know, we don't have capacity. Why would we, as you said, brew for you? So it's not easy.
Ben, did you have a question?
Yeah, it was. I was curious if if you felt that the American market was a little bit more open to some of, like, the crazier things that you do with your beers. Because, I mean, some of your beers are nothing short of crazy, for sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Coffee and barrel aging and wine barrel aging. So do you think, you know, did it play more of a role in your decision?
It did. You know, I mean, I love the American beer market. I really, really love it. And I think what's going on over here is amazing. And Europe is way behind. I think Europe will get there eventually, but for now, it's way behind. I mean, it's, you know, Americans are more open and more, yeah, as you say, the crazy stuff, where even Denmark, which a lot of people see Denmark as the new beer country, it is, but we're still...
I have a story about Denmark. I know the consul from Denmark in New York. And a couple of years ago, we did a rye bread project, a special event. And I met the consul, and he said, and he shook my hands. He said, I'm embarrassed because at the consul in New York, we serve Budweiser.
That is embarrassing.
He hired us, and we actually brought in Danish craft beers.
Cool.
And we served them at the consulate.
Excellent.
But they weren't even serving Carlsberg. They were serving Budweiser.
That's the way to do it.
So that's where Europe's at. That's what you're saying. But
yeah.
In America, tell us, like, so what are some of the cities that you regularly go to? You know, you must sell. I know you sell in New York. You've made beer in South Carolina. What are other cities that you travel to regularly?
I mean, I travel a lot, and that's kind of the part of being a gypsy, both for brewing, but also, you know, for promoting the brand and all. I think we're in 35 states right now, which is quite a lot. I don't go to all of them, but I've been to a lot of them. We go a lot to California. We have a big market out in California. You know, California is pretty much the home of IPAs, so we don't want to compete with them on that. But they're open to, you know, getting other stuff in. And place like Chicago, I like a lot. I go a lot to Chicago and have a lot going on out there. I have some good accounts and, you know, work with some good places. So
like you know, Brian Strumke from Stillwater. You guys are kind of like DJs, right?
I don't know about that. He used to be. Brian and I are good friends, and we work under the same distributor, under 12%. So we're very attached, and you know the Perfect Crime thing that we did, the one with the white label. It's not a Stillwater or an Evil Twin brand. It's actually a new brand we registered. So we're releasing those beers under the Perfect Crime, which is me and Brian together. And you know, we do a lot of stuff together. We travel a lot together.
Well, you guys are doing cool things. Josh, what's the next beer that you opened?
I think we got right now the Femme Fatale Brett, which seems to be like a really nice, easygoing 6% IPA with a little bit of a brown amices in there. Not too much. Like, it's just a little funky kick in there, but not going to knock your socks up.
It just kind of like hangs out in the back there.
Dries it out.
Gives a little earth. Yeah, for sure.
Actually, it's not a little bit. It's actually 100% Brett. But it's pretty young, so that's why you know can't taste it that much. But I've done other beers with Brett, and you know it's fun to experiment with Brett. But with this one, I wanted to go all the way, so it's only fermented with Brett. So it, you know, it's very fruity and easy drinkable to begin with. But after half a year, it's going to be like funky and.
So you're saying should we actually hold the beer? I mean, this is in my cellar at Jimmy's number 43.
You could.
Should I keep it, or should I wait for you to release more? That's
I think you should
funkier.
Keep some because it changes a lot. I actually went to a place called Mission Dolores in Park Slope recently, and they had a keg on of the old batch that I did back in Denmark. This one is brewed in South Carolina, and that keg was just funky as hell. It was fun to try, but I haven't had it for a long time. I think it was a little over a year old, and it was like really, really funky. So. You should definitely keep some of them and buy some new ones. And you know, the fun thing about a Brett beer, and same thing with Orval, for example, which is pretty much the mother of Brett beers, it's fun to, you know, serve them to people in different ages because you can really see how much they develop and how much they change over time.
Yeah, there's a complete change.
Yeah.
Like this beer, in a year, the hops are just going to lay right down on it. Those floors are going to lay right back, and that Brett's just going to come
gonna have
forward.
A lot of funk.
Get super funk, for sure.
Ben, do you hold back beers at Beer Craft?
All the time. I mean, we have a huge cellar program. So as cool stuff comes out that we feel, you know, is going to get good in a year or good in 5 years, we'll hang on to it. And oftentimes... Because a lot of the cellarable stuff, it sells right away because beer drinkers want to cellar their own stuff sometimes. So
exactly.
we'll take, you know, half or 30%, drop it down in the cellar, leave the rest on the floor, let everybody buy it out, and then give it a re-release in a year, 2 years, or 5 years, or 7 years, or whatever it might be.
Great. And Ryan, do you hold back any beers at Adobe Blues in Staten Island?
Yeah, we do a little bit. We've started to do it. I got some Brux this year, Nevada Russian River, and I served some of it right away and gave those people tasting notes, and then held on to the rest. And I think I'm going to give it probably 6 or 8 months, and you know, email those people and say, hey, you're next bottle's ready and give them their tasting sheet back. So,
you know, I do wish some of the distributors would hold on some. Every once in a while, we get a release of something that was held back, often inadvertently. Like a few years ago, there was a Brooklyn Brewery Schneider collaboration, Hopfenweiss, that the distributor had extra of, and they released it a year later. And you know, the difference from the new, you know, Hopfenweiss that was so forward hops to this really balanced, like really mature, really great beer was amazing. And I feel like that we all have a role in it. Some bars do it, but I think the distributors and breweries should also hold back some beer the same way that wineries do. What do you think about that, Josh?
Well, I was just in Burlington for a Christmas break with my wife, and like I was at this beer shop, and it was so amazing. They had this entire display of 2010 Smutty Nose Wheat Wine, which is a really marvelous beer, and the beer doesn't even get really good till about 2 years. But the people had just kind of held it back and forgot about it, and they're selling it for $2 a bottle. I know.
Good for you.
$2 a bottle. So I was like, I wasn't intending to get quite so drunk that night, but I mean, at $2 a bottle for, you know, 10-11% delicious 3-year-old beer, it's like.
We have those bottles on the shelf right now. I think the 2010, they are definitely not $2 a bottle.
Okay, so everyone's here. We're all touching Yuppie evil twin over here.
Touching
you. Yeah. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Quittin' Time by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
What you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're so happy to be here. It's 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's number 43. We've got the Good Beer Seal All-Stars tonight. Ben Granger from Beercraft, Ryan Barker from Adobe Blues, our favorite beer writer, Josh Bernstein, and our new hipster brewer buddy, Yeppe from Evil Twin.
Cheers.
Yeah. So you said you're working with a place in Connecticut called Two Roads, and that's actually our friend Phil Markowski is involved in that, right?
He is.
That's a new brewery that he's
part of. He's one of the guys behind that, yeah.
So, and you're saying they're welcoming other people to Contract Brew and Gypsy Brew? And
I think they actually filled up the capacity, but that's the plan. I mean, we took over a lot of the capacity, and we're going to start brewing the first batch next week, so it's pretty exciting.
All right.
Yeah.
And online, we've got a cool call-in guest. There's a place up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. It started with the A&G Home Brewing Supply, and now it's called Earth Eagle Brewing. Alex McDonald, he's making a traditional styles of beer called Gruet with herbs and plants. Alex, are you on the line?
We are, yeah.
Great, man. We've got some cool people here that are in New York City, and they all want to ask you questions. So first thing is, tell us how you got started. You were a home brewer, and now you have a brewery. But is Gruet your specialty?
Yeah, I would say obviously we started out as home brewers, opened the homebrew store, and then started our small brewery, a little one-barrel brew house here in Portsmouth. We do about 50% of what we brew is gruets.
Cool. And tell us the ingredients that you work with, because you're not just working with hops and grains, right?
Yeah, gruets traditionally were brewed from like the 16th century and before hops were introduced into brewing. It was usually you used whatever was local to your area, so a lot of people brewed with yarrow and heather tips and juniper berries and, you know, and different things like that. So we take a little spin on the historical brews and play a lot with the different herbs that are available to us.
What are you finding indigenously around the New Hampshire area that you can brew with?
Technically, locally, there is a place here in Portsmouth called Prescott Park, which is one of the first settlements in New England that there are a lot of local herbs grown right on property. Mm-hmm. But we get a lot of our stuff through local herbalists.
Awesome. And Ben Grange is here in New York, Beercraft. It's a great beer shop. He's a home brewer as well.
Ben. So yeah. are you using any of your bittering agents, any of the herbs that you're getting? Are they, what specifically is like kind of local to the area that you're using?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what like is actually local to New England per se. I think a lot of stuff that grows all over the world, like yarrow.
Yeah.
We use a lot of yarrow, sweet gale, wild rosemary, things like that.
What do you think the craziest thing is that you've put in a beer instead of hops to balance it out?
We actually do a hog's head beer. We smoke a pig's head and use that in a beer. Not in the herbal sense, but probably the weirdest ingredient we've used.
That's cool.
That might be one of the coolest things I've ever heard.
I've done. I did a stout some last year, and it was just a normal stout, but I aged it on a Spanish ham. It was
cool.
It came out pretty good.
That's like my two favorite things on the planet is pork and beer.
Did you eat the ham afterward?
I actually did. It was extremely bitter. I think it absorbed a lot of the bitterness. So, but it was fun.
Nice.
My question would be: what are the challenges with getting people to try these? You know, if you say, "Hey, I made a beer with a pig's head."
You know, it's amazing. I think craft beer enthusiasts have come a long way. I mean, they're excited to try it.
Definitely. I mean, you've got, you know, what else do people put in beer? They put oysters, they put lobsters, they put pig's ears, they put testicles, right? At the GABF this year in Colorado, our friend Chris O'Leary wrote about the weirdest beers, and one of them was Rocky Mountain oyster beer. That was
Yeah.
That started off as a spoof, though, and then because they got they got so many hits on it, they were like, "Hey, well, we got to do it now."
Now they're selling it in two packs soon enough.
I just read about it.
Yeah, and you know, we had a beer dinner last year with the chefs from the brewery at Schlenkele in Germany, and his requirement was he wanted to do bull testicle carpaccio, and instead they couldn't find it, so he substituted veal brisket. Now, how does that connect? It's either veal brisket or bull testicle carpaccio.
Not the same thing.
No. But I'm sure that in beer, maybe the veal proteins and the bull proteins might equal. Is that what you're looking for when you put those things in a beer? Yep, are you looking for proteins and things like that?
No, I'm looking for flavor. That's why I do it. I mean, it's, you know, I like ham and I like stout, and I'm like,
well, so is it better if we roast the meat first, or do you put the raw meat in?
No, the one we used was dried, you know, 3-year-old dried Spanish ham. You know, I wanted something with less fat, as little fat as possible, and, you know, the salty, meaty flavor. Just, you know.
Speaking of fat, how do the lipids in the hog's head and the Spanish ham, how does that affect the yeast and fermentation?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, I would say like the biggest thing, the biggest problem is the fats more than anything. But that, you know, we make a soup broth out of it and then refrigerate it so we can get all of that out of there.
Ah, so you clarify it and then you drop the clarified pig
broth in.
The one I did was just, you know, it was just a few cakes after fermentation, so it's pretty much just, you know, dry hamming it.
Dry hamming it.
I'm going to quote that later on today. By the way,
Alex, why do you? I mean, I don't think Gruit's that strange. We've seen a lot more people doing historical styles, Gruit, Gruditsky. You know, they seem to be very trendy. Why do you turn your protein into a broth and add that in? And why do you use meat at all? Like, what do you gain from adding the meat to your beer?
Well, I think it's a flavor profile. It's just something different to try. We were trying to get a smoky pork-based beer just to see what it would be, and it turned out to be something that people really dug. So,
did you find when you made the broth, you smoked a pig's head, and then you make this broth, and the pig's head has a substantial amount of collagen protein in it. Did that collagen protein add like a super richness to the beer with the kind of smoky flavor?
Yeah, absolutely. It was. And we do a porter with it, so it's nice, and, you know, it's got a lot of roasted malt, or you know, not roasted, but, you know, nice darker malts in there, and then and it finished with a nice pork roast. So it was really all I needed was some mashed potatoes, and it would have been like a full on meal.
A nice porky finish. That's great. Yeah. I've never said that about a beer, but I may say it later.
So actually, where are you guys selling in town? Portsmouth is such a fantastic beer town. No, Smutty Nose has really been such a catalyst and a driver. So are you guys doing mostly growler fills? Are you selling it from the bars around town? Or how are you guys doing
distribution? Yeah, so right now, being just a one-barrel brew house, we're right next door to the homebrew store. And we're just selling everything right out of our tap room. We're open on the weekends, four-hour windows, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And people are coming in, you can get samples and then fill growlers to take home.
So it's basically, so it's like nothing's really on tap around town, so if they want, they got to come to you?
Oh, I think I lost you guys.
No, just saying, so most of your stuff is just, so if they want to find your beer, they have to come to you?
Right now, yeah, the only place to find our beer is in the tap room.
That's one good way to have exclusivity.
you guys are awesome. So we're going to open another beer. Listen, you can't taste, Alex, but we're going to drink another Evil Twin beer. What's the next beer, guys?
Now that we are talking about, smokiness and meat and stuff, maybe we should do the Cowboy.
Yeah, the Cowboy.
Which is, it's a smoky, it's a smoked Pilsner. I want to tell you the story. I got the idea, I was at a friend's place in Oakland, California. That's actually the guy on the label. And we were just sitting one night drinking beer, and all of a sudden he said, I always wanted to be a cowboy. We started talking about what beers cowboys actually drink, and looked it up on Google, and came to, like, they drink shitty lagers. And I wasn't ready to try and make a shitty lager, so.
Google really says shitty lagers for cowboys?
Yeah, they do. Google it up. They drink, like, Pabst and Miller and stuff like that. So we came up with this idea of doing a smoke pilsen because, sitting around the bonfire at night and, being a cowboy. And so that's the idea behind this beer.
Well, it's good. It tastes like a shitty lager,
It does.
The smoke gives you the
smoke lager.
Yeah, the smoke overcomes any bad flavors.
It does. It's 10% smoke malt, so it's not overdone with smoke, but it has a little bit of smokiness, and I think it came out nice and drinkable.
Alex, I feel bad for you up there in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. You're missing out right now.
There's plenty of good beer.
Yeah,
up there,
but it sounds like it.
Yeah. Well, how about this? Let's ask this one thing. So you've got a homebrew shop there, the A&G Homebrewing Supply in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. What are the main things that you sell out of there, and how strong is the homebrew community in Portsmouth, New Hampshire?
Yeah, the homebrewing is huge around here. Portsmouth's pretty centrally located for New England, so we're only 50 miles north of Boston, 40 miles south of Portland, Maine. So we get a lot of traffic through here in Portsmouth because of Smutty Nose and the Portsmouth Brewery and now Earth Eagle. A lot of people are coming here to check it out, and we're getting a lot of tourism as well. So we're getting a lot of people from New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island. They're all shopping at our store because it's tax free in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you sell bottles of beer too, and other things?
No, the state of New Hampshire is really tight when it comes to liquor laws. So you have to be a convenience store technically in the state of New Hampshire to sell beer.
Wow. You have a lot of people buying homebrew supplies.
Oh, yeah. We're selling a lot of supplies. Yep.
And
yeah.
What are like some of the top items that you sell? Like malt, hops, kits? What is your number one and number two selling items?
Yeah, I would say we have a lot of all grain brewers around here. So we do sell a lot of grain, a lot of hops, a lot of yeast. And then there's a lot of people just getting into it. So we do sell some kits and, starter kits and ingredient kits as well. So.
What is the most sought after hop for a home brewer?
Most people are brewing IPAs. Yeah, it seems to be the most popular style.
Okay.
Even in a climate where like a lot of home brewers are brewing IPAs, because I mean I'm a home brewer and I brew a lot of IPAs for sure. But going to you guys to buy ingredients, do you have a lot of people show up that are asking, hey, what are some other things that I can use? I mean, do you have like kind of a lot of consults for homebrewers as far as guiding them into using yarrow or heather or pig wormswood or pig's heads?
Yeah. Where do I source a local pig head?
Have you considered selling it?
You guys should look into selling quarts of homebrewing pig stock. Yeah,
totally. You know, yeah, we get that question quite often, but I would say, you know, Belgian styles, you know, people are always asking questions about, you know, soaking oak chips and how to create oaky beers. And so, I mean, there's definitely a lot of people that are interested in doing different stuff, but I would say, you know, the IPAs and pales are the more common beers that most people are brewing out there. It doesn't seem like there's too much adventurous, too many adventurous homebrewers in the area at the moment. So.
Nice. Well, I was going to say, my wife's family's from Rochester, New Hampshire, and so that no-tax thing kind of struck a chord, because every time that we go back up there, she's like, you know what, Josh, we need to load up the car with everything that we possibly can and not pay tax on it.
And cigarettes,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Beer included. Beer included.
Wow. All right. Hey, I'll tell you what. Alex, you're welcome to stay on the air. We're going to come talk a lot more things in a few minutes. But hey, I can't even talk straight. It's been, what a year, Sandy. And New Year's Eve, I was wrecked on New Year's Eve. Jimmy's number 43. It was a wild night.
Does that mean drunk?
I was wrecked. Can't say drunk on the air. I'm a responsible drinker, Joe. But hey, let's take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network.
This one's called Off My Mind by Pamela Royal on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
We all know what a foodie is, but what's foodiness?
Foodiness is turning us into those chubby, slushy, slurping, lounge chair-bound morons in WALL-E, plugged in, pumped full of sugar, and brain dead.
Chef Erica Wides is here to fight against foodiness.
You have to keep drinking the Let's Get Real Kool-Aid for it to start to work.
Let's Get Real. Rediscover real food every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, all right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're blessed to have so many really awesome shows and great hosts on this network. Erica Wads, a great friend. In fact, she usually comes on right after us at 6 or 6:30 on Tuesdays. Well, hey, another great show. There's Cutting the Curd. It was one of the first shows on Heritage Radio Network. It was Ann Saxby's show. It was about cheese, and it was because of that that we were inspired to do the Beer Sessions Radio, because she was our buddy. And we're like, hey, if Ann Saxby's doing a show on Heritage Radio Network, we want to do one, too. So there's a lot of great history here. We're going on our third year. In fact, in February, it'll be our third year hosting Beer Sessions Radio, and we'll be celebrating it as part of New York City Beer Week. There's the New York City Brewer's Choice, which is the featured event, and Dave Broadreck and the whole Beer Sessions Radio crew produces it. So there's a lot coming up this year in 2013, but hey, shout out to all the great Heritage Radio Network hosts, and you can become a member, too. Go to heritageradionetwork.org. All right, here we are back in the studio. Yepy, Josh, Ben, Ryan, and Alex from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So, Alex, are you still on the air up there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, the other question was, Yepy and Ben, they wanted to know, what is the – you said you sold – a lot of people wanted to make IPA, but what's the top hop itself
and
that you guys sell?
And there's money riding
the top
on this.
certainly. The top hop, I would say, like, everybody wants Amarillo.
Oh!
Wait, what did you guys bet?
I was going to say that.
And in the little break, they bet it was Citra. So
Galaxy.
Okay. Ben, you lost $20. Yuppie, you lost $200. Because it's currency.
Now we get to touch Yuppie again.
You guys may not know this, but Yuppie, we're touching him. He's from Denmark.
I lost another touch.
In New York, you know, Denmark is another country and another continent. There's Danish chefs. But it's so wild. Denmark is so small.
It is.
And yet you guys have such an impact. What is it? Is it because you're small and you guys are a trading nation or something?
You know, I don't know. It's the, you know, we only 5 million people, and if we want to be seen in the world, we have to make a lot of ourselves. So I think that's what it comes down to.
Well, I have to shout out loud. I noticed the last couple of years, you know, the little bit of craft beer activity up there, Denmark stands out. You know, there's one or two in Sweden, one or two, you know, in Longnyo in Norway, but
yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on in Denmark. I don't know. It's... We're just very adventurous, and I don't know. We have, I think now we have like 130 breweries for 5 million people, so it's actually a lot of wow. a lot of breweries.
Well, another feature of the show tonight, our good friend Josh Bernstein, author of Brewed Awakenings, which is an awesome book, and I was reading it last night.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah, I was inspired. You came up with an app called Craft Beer New York, and tell us about the app and how it can, we can interact with it as consumers and bar owners.
Indeed. Well, you know what? 10 years ago, finding a good beer in New York City was pretty easy. There was a handful of great places to go out. I mean, you had Blind Tiger Ale House. You had, work with me here, everybody.
DBA.
Beer Crafts. Bartleby Blues. All those places. But nowadays,
Monk's Ale House.
Yeah, nowadays, it really seems like there's a new bar, there's a new brewery, a new bottle shop opening just about every week and every month. And it seems like it's an exaggeration, but it really is not. I mean,
no, it's the truth.
New York City is just kind of really exploding in such a big way right now. And it's just, we are behind for so long. When you're behind for so long in this town, it catches up at an accelerated clip, I think. And so New York is really on its way to being a great craft beer town. But the question is, where do you actually go to get a great craft beer in this city? And so, we're a town of 8 million people, 50 million tourists come through here every year. And so, I mean, it's a question that I got asked all the time. And so I kind of got tired of responding to emails. And then this company, Blue Crow Media out of London, contacted me and they asked me to put together this app where the basic idea is no matter where you're standing in New York City, you're going to find the best place to get a beer, to buy a beer, and find a brewery or a brew pub.
So, Josh, just for me, because how do I get your app? Like, do I just go on my iPhone or something?
Yeah, right now it's available in the iTunes App Store for Craft Beer New York. They'll be available for Android in March.
All right,
cool.
And so yeah, I did all the reviews, all the write-ups. I've been writing about bars and beer in New York City for about 12 years now, going everywhere from beer craft to Adobe Blues.
I think I saw this app on iTunes. Cool. For sure. It was somebody emailed it to me, and they emailed it to me because it was being advertised on iTunes with Beer Craft storefront on it.
It
which
was
is totally rad.
It does have Beer Craft storefront totally there. We did that just to get the mention on the show.
Clever.
I downloaded it.
All right.
Day or two after it came out, it's only $2, which is incredible to have all this knowledge in your pocket for $2. Or at least when I downloaded it, it was $2. Maybe it's not now.
Oh no. It's still $2, but you'd be amazed at the pushback because, I mean, people are so used to paying for things for free nowadays. Getting things for free nowadays. I got wrecked on the last beer.
Wrecked.
But getting things for free, that paying $2 seems just like this onerous thing for folks. I mean, people pay $8 for a beer at bars nowadays, I mean, in Manhattan. I mean, and $2 is a tip. And it's kind of crazy, and I feel like I have to combat people sometimes. And then I just kind of give up. I'm like, if you don't want to spend $2, you're not going to spend $2.
No. All right, Josh, keep guiding us through the show. Josh has been opening all the beers tonight. It's a special role on the show. Yeah. What's the next beer?
I think I'm the one with the bottle opener. I think the next beer we're going to do, the folks from Algash were really nice, and they sent this one down to us. It's their new Cool Ship series beer, and Cool Ship is their series of spontaneously fermented, I mean, they're basically American lambics, and this one's just, they usually some with fruit, like the cerises, cherries. This one is going to be a straight ale aged in oak, and so we haven't actually tried it yet, so we're going to give it a nice little
oh, that's great.
Pop, delicious. And then Ben will pass it
what's
along.
What's the name of this beer?
That's a Resurgam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Allagash is about 40 minutes north of here, man. I tell you, they got some great beer.
So, Alex, up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, so you think, is there a great beer scene up there?
Oh yeah, it's phenomenal up here. I mean, we've got, you know, Portland itself has exploded with breweries and really great breweries, and Allagash is just top class. So
how have bars like Black Birch and Kittery kind of helped really change the scene down there? And I think Todd Mutz opening up a brewery nearby too from Portsmouth.
Yeah. Todd's due to break ground in the spring on his. He's putting in a 10-barrel brew house. The Black Birch, I mean, that place is phenomenal. They have a great tap list, great guys, great food. And I think there's a lot of, yeah, Portsmouth itself is a foodie culture. And beer just goes right along with that.
You know, I grew up in New England too, and I always like going to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I'm really happy that we're talking to you. And right now we're drinking the Allagash, the Cool Ship. What's it called? Resurgam?
Yeah.
And what do you think about this, Ryan?
I really like it. It's got just enough tart for me. I mean, Allagash is one of those brews, especially as a person that buys beers and sells it to people, that I know that I can always go to. Like, they're always going to make something solid, and I can always drink it. I can. I always just, whatever it is, I know it's going
to
be good.
I was talking to the Allagash rep last week in New York, and he said, you know, everyone, I guess, knows that Allagash White is their main beer that everyone buys. And that's still, that's pretty wild. It's like a Belgian wit, and that's their most popular beer. And he said, what's just your second most popular beer? It's the Allagash Black, which is like, it's a black ale, maybe a hint of wheat. I remember when that came out, that was obscure. Number three is Allagash Triple. I mean, isn't that a great American brewery that their top three beers are like Belgian style and wheat style? It's amazing, you know. They're not doing an IPA either, are they?
No, I mean, if you go anywhere in New England, you're going to find like Allagash White's like the constant on tap. It's like being anywhere near St. Louis and Budweiser used to be on tap everywhere. Allagash White is just kind of like, it's the local beer now. My wife's mother likes Allagash White, and she drinks MGD 64, for God's sake.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, New England. Hey, Ben, do you carry a lot of Allagash?
Yeah, we have tons of Allagash. I mean, you know, we have the flagship stuff, the white and the triple, and we also have, you know, the Curio and the black and the Humalone when it came out, which I think was Allagash's approach to an IPA a while back. And yeah, I mean,
they have an IPA now called Humalone.
Yeah, Humalone. Yeah, Humalone. We had a few, like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, came out with a picture of dude and the chemical compound for the alpha, or actually for Humalone, on the actual labels.
As in, the dude's name was Hugh Malone.
Yeah. I just got that joke now. Yeah. I mean,
Hugh Malone and Hugh Malone.
Oh my God.
You know, we're geeking out today. It's our first show of the year, and we're having fun. Well, I think we're on with our fourth beer. And somebody said to me, oh my God, they're on their like sixth beer at the end of the show. We've had like four beers between five of us.
Yeah, we're doing good.
Yeah, we're just getting warmed up. And we got a guy in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, who's not even. Are you drinking anything, Alex?
Oh yeah, I'm drinking in my tap room right now. Of course.
Well, tell us what you're drinking, because we didn't get a chance to get your samples.
Well, I'm drinking right now. I'm drinking a Walton Henry, which is a gruit with Sweet Flag, Mirka Gale, and Wild Rosemary. Sweet Flag was an herb that Walt Whitman and Henry Thoreau used to make teas of, and then go walk in the woods and write poetry.
Wow. What are you implying there?
I know, right?
Do you get herbal buzz? Is that what it is?
Well, it's kind of a combative. It's similar to hops. You know, they have that relaxation kind of effect.
And tell us about another beer that you have on tap right now.
We have the Grange, which is a locally sourced pale ale. It's hit heavily with Nugget, actually, from a hop farm on Long Island called Pint to Farm, or Farm to Pint, I mean.
So you also make beers that aren't gruits?
Oh, yeah. We brew a lot of traditional style beers as well.
Yeah, but what do you think about that? I mean, looking back, you know, before whatever, the modern age, you know, our friends Dennis and Joe Fisher in Maine, they wrote a great book called Homebrewer's Garden. You know, they talked about recipes with dandelion and other, you know, forage products and ginger. And that seems what you're going into, which is awesome and cool. But, Yeppe, have you been experimenting with any ingredients like that, like locally sourced herbs and
not
foraged
really.
Ingredients?
Not really, actually. And the reason, it's not a choice I've taken, but a lot of brewers are actually doing that. In Denmark, they're very, like, local, and we only want to use Danish ingredients. So I kind of, you know, I've kind of tried to stay away from that because, you know, I don't want to do that.
So you want to be like cliched, like Noma, that restaurant?
I don't want to be, yeah.
I just get seaweed from the beach.
I work with Noma. I've made two house beers for Noma. One is with juniper. It's a dunkel, you know, German style dunkel with juniper. And I made a pale ale with oxalis, which is like an herb that grows in the forest. So I've done that, but only for Noma.
If you don't know, listeners, Noma has for the last couple of years been the number one rated restaurant in the world. It's in Denmark and Copenhagen. But it's funny, the reason that I bring that up, Alex, is that it sounds like what you're doing in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, you sound like you're the most locavore brewer I've ever met. If you're using all these like particular herbs and ingredients, that sounds pretty cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think we try to use as much local as we can, but it's not all locally sourced, obviously. I mean, our price point would be off the charts if we were trying to do that all the time.
Was the Pighead local?
Say it again.
Yep. Well, the pig head, was that local?
Yeah, I was just saying that, you're kind of cutting in and out on me now. Yeah, we try to use as much local stuff as we can, but, obviously if we did that all the time, our price point would be off the charts.
Well, Alex, I say thank you for calling in, dude, and we're definitely going to talk more because it sounds like you're doing something that no one else is doing in America. And we'll keep up with you. Again, Alex McDonald, A&G Home Brewing Supply, and the Earth Eagle Brewing up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. All right, so we're just going to chat amongst ourselves a little bit. Josh, you brought another really great, amazing American beer. What is it?
Yeah, it's kind of topical right now. That's a heady topper from Alchemist. And, I mean, you can't believe what they say on the rating sites. But on Beer Advocate, it became the top-rated, most lusted after beer today. And so it's a really amazing can, super fresh double IPA. We're up in Vermont. It was canned maybe about a week ago, and it's really great.
I'll say that I like it. One thing, and I know there's a thing about the cult beers. Mm-hmm. I'm not always – I think that there's so many good beers and so many beers that I want. I can load up a draft list or something. There's way too many beers for me to drink, and I love this beer. But honestly, when Yuppie came on tonight, his first beer was the Hipster Ale. Mm-hmm. I feel like the nose was almost more of a hop bomb. Mm-hmm. Than this heady topper.
Hmm.
What do you guys think? It's controversial.
That is pretty controversial. I mean, they're two different beers.
I'll quote you on it.
I wish we hadn't drank all the hipster ale so we could compare. But
oh, man, there's no more hipster ale. Well, they're both in cans. Maybe that's the comparison. I don't know.
It could be.
Okay, one more beer. What are we drinking next? This is pretty awesome. I mean, the lineup here, and Ben, you brought some things from Beer
Craft.
We drank
some of my saisons, or some of Joe and my saison earlier, and we also have a Cascadian Dark that we brought with us that Joe made for our New Year's Eve celebration. That was basically just the staff.
Who's Joe?
Oh, Joe's our brewer.
You have Joe's a brewer at Beer Craft.
Yeah, for sure. Well, he's our buyer slash brewer. I mean, I own the place, and I do. I'm basically the janitor. I build and fix everything. So, Joe really takes care of a lot of stuff for us. So this is this dark ale that we've got here is his. It's called Hot or Not, and it's a Cascadian dark. Here we can open.
So wait, so you guys make beer for fun at Beer Craft?
Well, we make it for fun. Eventually, we will we'll be licensed. We're in the middle of getting our license right now, so we can sell our house brewed stuff.
And where will your brewery be? At Beer Craft?
Yeah.
Wow, what kind of license is that?
It's called a restaurant brewer's license, but it's kind of like a brew pub license, except for I can't sell for resale. I can only sell out of Beer Craft. Yeah. Really, we're getting the license to subsidize our home brewing habit.
That's amazing. And I know that our good friend Chris Kuzma in New York has taken over as brewer at the 508 Gastropub mm-hmm. in Manhattan, which also has the same license. So there's a lot of potential. I would say this, looking at 2013, if you want to be a brewer, whether you're going to be a gypsy brewer or you want to have a little restaurant brewing license, it might be the year to go legal, guys, if you're out there home brewing.
Do it.
Why not?
I think in New York City, we're going to see things explode next.
They're exploding. They're exploding as a hat. It's getting crazy. I have one question for Yeppe. You were talking earlier about beer culture in Denmark and beer culture in the U.S. and how they're kind of like they're a bit similar. Everybody's a little bit more adventurous. Do you think that has anything to do with our lack of beer culture, like kind of? Like predecessing that, like we, yes. we had lagers and then we had prohibition, then we had nothing until the 80s when all of a sudden we had something. Do you think that has a lot to do with it?
I think it does. Denmark, as an example, is a perfect example because we had Denmark for being such a small country and having a very big brewery called Carlsberg that we all know mm-hmm. has pretty much had the monopoly in Denmark for the last 150 years. And when I was young and started drinking beers and all, Carlsberg were the only beer you can get. You can get Carlsberg, you can get the spin-off of Carlsberg, like other brands that Carlsberg owned, or you can get imports that Carlsberg imported. And that's pretty much what we could get. And I think, the whole, they talk about a beer revolution in Denmark the last 10 years, and I think it came from, going against Carlsberg, kind of like going against your parents when you were a teenager. And, we can't have Carlsberg controlling what we drink in Denmark. So I think that's totally true.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up in a few minutes. Let's just go across the room and everyone tell us what's going on in the new year. Ben, what's happening at Beer Craft besides becoming a restaurant brewery.
Yeah, we're waiting on our brewer's license. There's a tasting every Tuesday all year long and a draft event every Thursday. I don't know, and we just always have a lot of beer.
You guys have a lot of beer. Ryan, Adobe Blues in Staten Island.
Yeah, we have a lot of beer also, and we keep getting more. So we got Coast to Coast Hosts coming up next week.
January 5th, and we'll actually have Wendy Littlefield awesome. From Van Bergen DeWolf on our show next week.
That's
talking
awesome.
About Coast, the new New York City Coast to Coast Hosts, because
right, right.
she got awesome. Wiped out in Hurricane Sandy. So.
Yeah, so we're doing that. Hope to line up some more secret beers for Adobe. Yeah, just keep rolling. Do some more tap takeovers.
Cool. And, you know, on near the bar, you've got a horse saddle kind of sitting out. I'm due to go there. And one day I will come on and ride that thing.
Awesome. Awesome. All right? I'll be waiting.
And Josh Bernstein, what's going on? What's going on in 2013?
I would pay to watch Jimmy ride a horse saddle.
Oh, we're going to Adobe Blues and stuff.
I'll pitch in on that. I will definitely pitch in on that.
In 2013, besides the app, it's rolling along. I have another book coming out this fall called Complete Beer Course, which is kind of be the ultimate start from scratch guide for people that are just getting into craft beer. So that'll be out in September. And so I'm still working on finishing that up. And besides that, Brood Awakening is still out and about.
All right. Yuppie?
Cool. Yeah, I have a lot going. I mean, first of all, I'm going to do more beers and, you know, get more beers out there. We have been under capacity for a long time, so that will hopefully help a little bit.
What's your favorite bar in Brooklyn? Where do you hang out the most?
I hang out at Spuyten because I live close and I like Joe, the owner, a lot.
So, ladies, if you want to meet Yuppie, go to Spuyten Divel, another good beer seal bar.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks for everybody. Again, shout out to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. We cannot do it without you. And Heritage Radio Network. If you want to be a member, go to heritageradionetwork.org. Our big event for New York City Beer Week is coming back at the end of February. And New York City Brewers Choice is coming back February 27th. Go to goodbeerseal.com. You can buy advance tickets now. They will not be discounted. They will only go up. And we've already sold like one-third of the tickets. Scott Ficar from Captain Lawrence will be the keynote speaker this year. We've got some great brewers, including Yuppie's coming. He doesn't even know it, but he's going to be there.
Yeah. I am.
All right. And Barry is coming back. I just got they brewed at Omegang, the Barry Relief beer. I got a delivery today. There's a lot of cool things going on in New York City in beer. And check out goodbrewseal.com. So thanks again to everyone. And let's give a sign off. Thanks to Yuppie, Josh, Ben, Ryan, and Alex for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Skål.
Skål.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.